Blog Talk Radio.
John Calvin, who started Presbyterianism. He was actually, I think, born in Geneva, Switzerland, and he was a real, I would call a religious bigot. And an idea of Calvin in the original film Mary, a Queen of Scots, starring Katharine Hepburn and Frederick Mark, black and white film shot during the late 30s. Very good film. Those of you who are somewhat familiar with the law, you've heard of Blackstone's dictionary. Sir William Blackstone, English, a legal scholar and lawyer, born on this day, and one of the most important inventors who still didn't get the credit while he lived for all the things that he did with electricity, was born in what is now what was Yugoslavia, Nikola Tesla. Born in 1856, he worked with Thomas Edison and got ripped off. His name is memorialized on the hood of cars now called the Tesla, which is electronic car, electric power, which is being made successfully in a suburb of San Francisco, one of the bedroom communities. Excuse me, I was just cold. Those of you who like reading and remember the name Marcel Proust, his birthday today, and Carmina Burana, the great Karl Orff, who stayed in Nazi Germany. That's probably his most popular piece and was based on the songs that the medieval monks sang, and it's one of the most popular classical music pieces. One of the great journalists, I happened to have met him at the American Booksellers Convention, which was held in L.A. back in the 80s. He worked on NBC with Chet Huntley, and there was a big strike of all the news commentators, and Brinkley went on strike with the rest of them. Chet Huntley did not. David Brinkley was from I think North Carolina, and a very fine gentleman, one of the nicest people I ever met, certainly in the field, and he's not related to this so-called historian from Texas named Brinkley. The first black to win major tennis tournaments from New York, Arthur Ashe. He recently died of a heart attack. And, of course, we have the great musician. His father was also a great folk musician, Arlo Guthrie was born on this day. And I think Arlo's got some rare disease. And, of course, you probably remember him, if you didn't, in the film Alice's Restaurant. And, of course, that was a very popular song from the 60s. The father of rocketry, an American professor, Robert Goddard, died in 1945. He was the first one to successfully shoot off a rocket, I think at the University of Massachusetts back in the 20s, late 20s. The great, in talking about Massachusetts, one of the great pop conductors, and actually he was very good at classics, Arthur Fiedler, died on this day in 1979. He made many records. He created the Boston Pops concerts. His father was Max Fiedler, who came from Germany. And Arthur Fiedler was best known. He was kind of like the Fiorello of the Canuck of the podium. He liked to chase fire engines. And there's an RCA Victor album with him on the running board of a fire engine. And he doesn't have the baton, doesn't have a hose, but he's got a fire chief's cap on. And, of course, if you remember Bugs Bunny and that great voice, Mel Blanc, he died on this day. Still got this cold. And among the events today, we have Horatio Gates. I don't know if he's related to this Gates, who was Secretary of Defense, or Bill Gates of Microsoft. But Horatio Gates was a Revolutionary War general in the Continental Army. In 1775, he banned blacks. Blacks were to be excluded from serving in the Continental Army. I think Gates was from the South, if I'm not mistaken. We have the first of another vice president who succeeded to the presidency upon the death of the president. In 1850, Millard Fillmore succeeded Zachary Taylor, who was known as Old Rough and Ready, and made his reputation in the Mexican War. And, of course, I think one of his daughters married a famous politician, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, we have the Fillmore and Fillmore Street in San Francisco, named after Millard Fillmore, who was a mediocre president. In 1890, Wyoming became the 44th state. In 1910, if you've been to Chicago and you like the Chicago White Sox, Comiskey Park opened. I haven't been there. It was the last baseball game I ever attended, over 40 years ago. 1917, Emma Goldman, who was an immigrant rights advocate from Russia, I believe, she opposed the military draft during the World War I when the United States entered the war, and she was prosecuted and put in prison. In 1918, the Union of the Socialist Soviet Republics was established, and, of course, it's supposed to have been broken up, so we hear. But Putin is trying to keep the Kretchens in and get them to behave, and other things have been going on in Russia, which seems that he's the new czar. And, of course, he was involved with Russian Air Force general who ordered the downing of 007, the KAL jet, back in 1983, when Larry McDonald, a congressman, was on that jet, and 63 other Americans died. And it's also depicted partially on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas on YouTube. In 1925, we had the notorious Scopes monkey trials, which Scopes was a high school teacher, I think a biology teacher in a Tennessee school district, and he was talking about Darwinism and did we descend from the apes or something along those lines. Anyway, he was prosecuted by Williams Jennings Bryant. In fact, we have his voice. He ran four times for president, unsuccessfully each time, and he was a fundamentalist. Excuse me. He was from Illinois. He studied law, and the school is now way long time out of business. And he went down there to prosecute the Scopes, and Clarence Darrow, who was also from Illinois, went down there to defend Scopes. The Scopes loss of Williams Jennings Bryan died 5 days after the trial. But eventually, Scopes' argument won out, and it's certainly a theory, although there are people who still think we didn't descend from the apes, and there are those who think we did, which is called Darwinism. In 1925, TASS, the Russian news agency, was set up, and of course it was a cover, some people think, for Russian spies. The original Soviet intelligence agency was called Cheka, the Cheka. Then it became the NKVD during Stalin's time, and then became the KGB during Andropov and Beria's time. And it's now called the Russian State Security, or Federal Security, I think that's what it's called. But some people think it's the same thing. And in 1958, the first known parking meters were set up in England. 625 of them were supposedly set up, and of course things haven't been the same since. Yet we believe, those of us who think that the bicyclists should pay their way, their fair share, this loudmouth 1%, which has representation without taxation, as some people think, that bicyclists should pay parking meter fees, just like people who drive cars and motorcycles. Motorcyclists have to pay. If they get caught, they get tagged because they have a license plate. Now, there's this talk in San Francisco about a registry for bicycles, but that's not going to solve the problem. In fact, I think Davis, California, which is a university town, University of California, Davis, they've got their bicycle situation under control. It's managed. There are a few problems. But in order for fairness and to prevent some of this theft of bicycles, because these things are expensive, some cost as much as $5,000. They need license plates, liability insurance. Of course, if the owner has apartment insurance, then the liability insurance should cover him, and also to wear a helmet. And also, we're finding out that more and more of these bicyclists are riding bicycles because they lost their license, because they violated the rules of the road or the driving under the influence, whether it's drugs or alcohol. And I understand that that's their only source. But personally, there are those of us who think if they were driving DUI, that they have, and some of these people are around pot and they're using their cell phones, that they should take public transportation. They should not be allowed on the road not even with two wheels. So that's, you know, we've got to get this thing under control. It's out of control. Now, of course, this is the anniversary of the late August is the anniversary of the shooting down of the KAL, the Korean jet, which supposedly the Russians claimed strayed into Soviet airspace and was suspected of spying. And they were ordered to land at Sakhalin Island. They didn't do it. And we're finding out that, Korea was under Japanese conquest. Was a colony of Japan from up until the end of World War II, and that the Koreans do not have the Western training, especially within their aircraft industry, their airline industry. It's relatively young compared to like the French, the Americans, the Germans, the British, the Scandinavians, that our airline industry in the West has gone back over 100 years. In fact, ever since Wilbur Wright flew the first airplane back in the early 19th century. Excuse me. So and I understand that these pilots who fly these Korean jets, there are more accidents that haven't been publicized, and that these people are not taught to think for themselves, and that's why there's pilot error, which seems to be one of the big issues in this Asiana jet, which went down Saturday in San Francisco, where the pilots in the cockpit apparently didn't react or didn't listen to the or didn't understand the instructions from the air traffic controllers station. Also, English, a lot of people don't know this, but English is the universal language for all airline pilots. Whether you're Russian, Chinese, you have to learn English because English is spoken in the air traffic control centers. And, of course, Americans are dominant, and we speak English, as we're supposed to anyway. So this may be a problem. And I was talking to a former Navy pilot, and he has flown around the world. And he told me that some of these air traffic controllers speak so fast, it's difficult even for an American to understand them. So this may be a problem also. Also at the San Francisco International Airport, George Christopher was the one who really built it up and brought in United Airlines big time, because they have their facility, major facility there. And we have a tape from the head of United Airlines talking about George Christopher, and we'll play the audio from that tape. But we found out that from Nate Ratner, who was San Francisco's unofficial plumber, not the type, the Watergate type, but he told me that, and I checked this out, that an Asian who was in the fire extinguisher business, maybe that was a front, we don't know, he's very controversial, he sold defective fire equipment to the San Francisco airport. And when he was challenged about the defective equipment, he refused to replace it or repair it. And they had to threaten to sue him and maybe prosecute him for fraud. So he buckled and submitted and replaced the defective equipment. And so thank heaven we didn't have defective equipment last Saturday when that Asiana jet crashed on the runway here in San Francisco. Excuse me, still have this cold. I think I'm going to play the, where is it? Still have this bloody cold. The, my mind just escaped for a minute there. Here we go. The clip from our man who was the prosecuting attorney in the Scopes Monkey trial. Also, I should talk about, since Trotsky was very prominent in the formation of the Soviet Union, here is, I think this will be an interesting little clip of what you have in our archives, and it happened to crop up. And well, let's see, where is Trotsky here? Leon, here he is. He was also the founder of the Russian army, and this should be interesting. I'm going to play Leon Trotsky's speech and when he was in exile.
Dear comrades and friends, I hope that this time my voice will reach you and that I will be permitted in this way to participate in your double celebration. Both events, the 10th anniversary of our American organization, as well as the Foundation Congress of the Fourth International, deserve the attention of the workers incomparably more than the warlike gestures of the totalitarian chiefs, the diplomatic intrigues, or the pacifist congresses. Both events will enter history as important milestones. No one has now the right to doubt that. It is necessary to remark that the birth of the American group of Bolshevik Leninists thanks to the courageous initiative of comrades Kennan, Schachtman, and Abern didn't stand alone. It approximately coincided with the beginning of the systematic international work of the left opposition. It is true that the left opposition arose in Russia in 1923, 15 years ago. But regular work on an international scale began with the 6th Congress of the Comintern. Without a personal meeting, we reached an agreement with the American pioneers of the Fourth International, before all on the criticism of the program of the Communist International. Then, in 1928, began the collective work, which after 10 years led to the elaboration of our own program recently adopted by our international conference. We have the right to say that the work in this decade was not only persistent and patient, but also honest. The Bolshevik Leninists, the international pioneers, our comrades across the world, searched the way of the revolution as genuine Marxists, not in their feelings and wishes, but in the analysis of the objective march of events. Above all, were we guided by the preoccupation not to deceive others nor ourselves. We searched seriously and honestly. And some important things were found by us. The events confirmed our analysis as well as our prognosis. Nobody can deny it.
Now that was Leon Trotsky speaking his difficult English. Now, Stalin drove him out of Russia. He was he was the father of the Russian army, which defeated the Whites, which were the defenders of the Tsar and who wanted to bring back, restore the monarchy in Russia. And they lost in the Civil War, and Trotsky and Stalin and Lenin prevailed. But they had Stalin, after Lenin died, Lenin warned people before he died that to watch Stalin. He didn't trust Stalin, and it turned out his assessment was correct, was accurate. There was a falling out between Stalin and Trotsky left Russia, fled, and Stalin had his agents track Trotsky all over the world. Trotsky ended up in Mexico in a armed compound, and Stalin sent a skilled assassin after him named the guy wormed his way into Trotsky's confidence, and then the opportunity arose, he tried to assassinate and successfully did injure Trotsky, so he died a few days later from a pickaxe attack. And of course, Mercator was the alias used by Stalin's assassin. There was no death penalty in Mexico, so Mercator spent about 20 years in a Mexican jail, and then he was released. He went to Cuba, and then he went to the Soviet, back to Russia, and was honored as a hero of the Soviet Union. Now, Trotsky's original family name, or Russian Jewish heritage, was Bronstein. His great-nephew became the editor of the San Francisco Examiner, which was a Hearst paper at the time. Bronstein is no longer, Philip Bronstein is no longer with the Examiner, which is now controlled by a Canadian gay from British Columbia, I believe. So that's where that's at. I don't have anything from Brinkley right away. I did an interview when I was down in L.A., but I think he worked with people like Eric Sebra. I was all part of that crowd, and I think this is real important because Brinkley was a real journalist, and Sebra talks about what journalism really is and something that's lacking today because we have these lapdogs in the media which suck up to politicians and get a couple of them have gotten payoffs such as HUD-funded condos and that sort of thing. So I think this is an appropriate tribute to David Brinkley, who was one of the nicest men I ever met, certainly, and a really fine and a real journalist.
By my time of life, one has accumulated more allegiances and moral debts than the mind can remember or the heart contain. So I cannot enumerate my betters, my mentors, and sustainers during so many years of trying to use with sense this communications instrument as unperfected as the persons who use it. But they know that I know who they are. Many are gone, including the man who invented me, Ed Murrow. Some died in the wars we were reporting. I've gone the normal span of a man's working life, rather abnormal in this calling, and it's a happy surprise. We were like a young band of brothers in those early radio days with Murrow. If my affections are not easily given, neither are they easily withdrawn. I have remained through it all with CBS News, and if it is regarded as old-fashioned to feel loyally to an organization, so be it. Mine has been here an unelected, unlicensed, uncodified office and function. The rules are self-imposed. These were a few. Not to underestimate the intelligence of the audience and not to overestimate its information. To elucidate when one can, more than to advocate. To remember always that the public is only people and people only persons, no two alike. To retain the courage of one's doubts as well as one's convictions in this world of dangerously passionate certainties. To comfort oneself in times of error with the knowledge that the saving grace of the press, print, or broadcast is its self-correcting nature. And to remember that ignorant and biased reporting has its counterpart in ignorant and biased reading and listening. We do not speak into an intellectual or emotional void. One's influence cannot be measured. History provides for the journalist no markers or milestones, but he is allowed to take his memories. And one can understand as he looks back the purpose of the effort and why it must be done. A friend and teacher, the late Walter Lippmann, described the role of the professional reporter and observer of the news in this manner. We make it our business, he said, to find out what is going on under the surface and beyond the horizon, to infer, to deduce, to imagine, and to guess what is going on inside, and what this meant yesterday and what it could mean tomorrow. In this way, we do what every sovereign citizen is supposed to do, but has not the time or the interest to do it for himself. This is our job. It is no mean calling, and we have a right to be proud of it and to be glad that it is our work. In the end, of course, it is not one's employers or colleagues that sustain one quite so much as the listening public, when it be so minded. And I have found that it implies only one consistent test, not agreement with one on substance, but the perception of honesty and fair intent. There is in the American people a tough, undiminished instinct for what is fair. Rightly or wrongly, I have the feeling that I have passed that test. I shall wear this like a medal. Millions have listened intently and indifferently, in agreement and in powerful disagreement. Tens of thousands have written their thoughts to me. I will feel always that I stand in their midst. This was Eric Severide in Washington. Thank you and goodbye.
Eric's not retiring from television entirely, but only from daily journalism, and that means, of course, this broadcast. It's not only his beautifully chosen words of wisdom that we shall miss, to this newsman he's one of the finest essayists of the century, but we shall also miss our almost daily contacts with him in the pursuit of our craft, in which his rare insight and unswerving integrity were a constant source of professional guidance. And yes, it's also true that we shall be the poorer in our self-esteem for no longer being able to call him colleague. But that's the way it is. Wednesday, November 30th, 1977. This is Walter Cronkite, CBS News. Good night.
That was a memorial to Eric Severide. And we found Lennon's voice, and I think it's appropriate since he was the founder of the Soviet Socialist Republic, Russia.
Hey, капиталисты Англии, Америки, Франции ведут войну против России. Красная армия непобедима, ибо она объединила миллионы трудовых крестьян с рабочими, которые научились теперь бороться, научились товарищеской дисциплине, не падают духом, закаляются после небольших поражений, смелее и смелее идут на врага, зная, что близко полное его поражение.
That was Lennon's voice in Russian. He didn't speak English. Lennon was also a lawyer, came from a Russian Jewish heritage background, probably didn't practice. And, of course, he played politics. I don't think he played poker, but that's our ending theme.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going
to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
expense.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to call up.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrap.
Yeah, a pair of trades. Anyway, we'll be back Friday, hopefully at 4 o'clock. This is Peter Paul Verzola. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas, and we are now under Amicus Veritas Net. We had a little problem. AmicusVeritas.net or .info. Good night, and hopefully we will be back Friday at 4 p.m., and we'll have that, hopefully that interview from United Airlines talking about the San Francisco International Airport.